Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Somos Mas, the official podcast of Somos Mas NM and your source for the latest news and notes on New Mexico United and the New Mexico Runners. My name, of course, is Seth Bidoff. I am the man you cannot see. And joining me this evening, we have the one and only awesome truth, Jacob Terrell, Earl Nieto. Guys, what a phenomenal weekend. I mean, not only do we see New Mexico United come and do something that we've rarely ever seen them do. We saw them do it in spectacular fashion, and we also saw the crowning of a brand new champion. Earl, you've been waiting, and I promise you we will talk WrestleMania tonight if you ever get the licorice that you're done.
That's like an hour-long licorice. Jesus.
Okay, maybe we won't get to WrestleMania tonight. I mean, we promised Earl we would talk about it, but now he's got licorice. So
Earl probably isn't going to be able to talk the whole episode.
I mean, to be fair.
Let me know when it's WrestleMania time. I'll let you know.
Did you even watch the match, Earl?
How dare you?
How do I know? The group message was nothing but WrestleMania for 48 hours. The only United stuff was me. That was it. So how was I don't know what you guys watched.
And Josh, you are correct. It is El Paso. You are correct, sir.
So yes, I did watch the match, not live, obviously. Because in this weird world that we live in, as Jacob takes a call, WWE was my first love. And then soccer came in. So soccer is a mistress.
Okay. I guess that's fair. I guess it's a fair analogy there, Earl. But yeah, it was just, it was a phenomenal weekend. I do want to question this though, because as we were texting Saturday night, you said you were multitasking. Now, I took that to mean you were watching both at the same time. Like I was. I had United on one screen, WrestleMania on the other, and just having a whole lot of fun with Saturday night. And then it carried on over into Sunday. We'll get to, like I said, hopefully you'll finish your licorice and we'll get to that later. But I mean, were you not watching both?
Of course I was.
Okay.
But my attention was more on WrestleMania, especially seeing Damian Priest. Or that was night two. Mm-hmm. There was a lot happening night one. So I was multitasking watching the match on my phone, which is about the size of.
We know how big phones are.
In comparison to this licorice, it's like a fourth of it. Mm. So on that tiny screen there, I was trying to watch the match. So I didn't really get a chance to watch the match and get the details that I wanted to. Mm-hmm. So I went back and rewatched it.
Jacob, obviously you watched it live. I watched it live. And this is one of those, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, this is something we haven't seen United do a whole lot of. I mean, not only did we come back from behind after surrendering two late goals, we didn't win this match.
Yeah.
And I think we discussed it a lot last year. I feel like we could probably count on one hand still the number of times that this club has come from behind to pick up 3 points and let alone even pick up a single point.
I mean, that late.
Yeah.
I think we've done a little bit better in the last year or so of coming back after giving up an early goal, maybe, mm-hmm. and, you know, leveling it in the first half still. And then, but nothing as dramatic and as late as what we saw Saturday night. I mean, it was basically the 90th minute. We score an equalizer and then 92nd minute, whatever it was, we score the winner. And so just absolute madness for sure.
It absolutely was. I do have one question before we get into our recap. Did we hire JJ Abrams to give us this many lens flares? I mean, and no slight against, you know, Windfire Productions and no slight against the club and the setup and anything. It's just, we got to figure out something better. We really do. And
it's called our own stadium, Seth. That's the only option. That's the only way to fix this.
Well, I would think that we could at least, you know, set up, you know, off center or something. And it may look a little odd, you know, but I think it would give us a better option instead of staring into the sun for the first 45 minutes of the match. But I mean, they did what they could with the weather, and we know that this is a common. We know that with it, when the wind kicks up like it does, it's going to affect the broadcast. There are going to be changes. And one of the things that really bothered me about the broadcast, and I don't think it was the broadcast itself, I could not hear this referee's whistle at all in this game. I don't know about you guys, but there were times where I wasn't 100% sure what was going on because the players were just kind of stop and like mill around. And then, you know, even on the penalty call that we'll see here in a minute, you couldn't hear the whistle. You could not hear anything. There's no telling what the stoppages in play were. And I don't know, but maybe it's just me, but it bothered me that I couldn't hear this and I couldn't tell what was going on half the time.
I didn't watch the broadcast. Besides, I watched some highlights of the broadcast. Like I didn't watch the highlight package necessarily. I went to the full match replay on ESPN Plus and watched, fast forwarded to the parts that I wanted to watch. And I didn't notice anything, but like I said, I also wasn't watching everything. So
see, be like Jane, watch it twice. We could all be like Jane.
If I didn't have to drive 2.5 hours back from the match, I would have rewatched it, but could not do that with the
very, very true. Yeah. I wanted to hit a couple of those points there before we really got into this, because there's a lot to unpack from this match here.
So much.
I mean, obviously, you know, the Mexico United comes out and gets an early goal, goes up 1-0 in the 7th minute. Then gives up 2 late goals, the second of which came on a penalty that was converted by Armando Moreno to put El Paso up 2-1. And then you see some absolutely, you can call them brilliant subs. You absolutely can. To see Jacobo Reyes and Daniel Bruce come on there at the end of the match, at a time where you think, okay, there's so little time left, what sort of impact could they have? And they turned the match on its absolute head. And United, there are 4 goals in the final 12 minutes of this match.
Yeah.
And United comes from behind to win this match 3-2. It gives El Paso their 4th loss of the season. United stays 3rd in the Western Conference.
We moved up to 3rd.
Yeah, moved up to 3rd. And there's so many things went well in this match. There's also some things that did not go well. But it's just, I mean, where do we start here? I mean, I think we have to start with the play of the midfield. I think we have to look at what they did early to generate that first goal that New Mexico United had.
To me, it wasn't the midfield. It was Harris. Okay. Almost single-handedly Harris. He was wreaking havoc on that left side from the first whistle until... He basically created or had a hand in creating every chance we had in the first half, including the goal. Mm-hmm. And him losing him at halftime, you could really see in the second half, we had to kind of switch up what we were doing. And that in the second half, you can say that the midfield kind of took over, because that was when we had to change a little bit of our plan as far as how we were going to attack and break them down. And it wasn't so much just, hey, let's break them down with speed on the wings. Let's do a little bit more tactically. But Harris in the first half was just absolutely insane. He constantly was getting behind the big, I called him Gunther all night. I don't know what his name is. The big, tall number 15 guy. And Dahlenmeier, maybe?
Dahlenmeier, yeah.
Was constantly just getting in behind him. And because El Paso was playing with wingbacks that were pushing so high up, there was just a ton of space back there for him to get in behind. And you see it on the goal. He gets in behind and then is able to put in a cross on the first goal. That is, he's able to get in behind and puts a ball across that everybody smartly lets go. And Marco Micheletto gets his first goal with New Mexico United, just an absolute rocket from just outside the 18 that honestly was one of the best struck balls I've seen in person in a long, long time.
Yeah, I know. And we'll back up the highlight package here so we can go back and look at this. But, you know, you saw it from the early moments of this game. You know, you talk about Deion Harris getting in behind and working up that left wing. And that was something that stood out to me throughout the night for both clubs. Both clubs were working the left wing on their attacking side. Earl, when you watch this, you know, particularly from us as a defensive standpoint, and we'll get to Dayon here in a minute, this is something we've seen a few times throughout the season. Our right wing, our right side of the defense getting worked by defenders. What do you think it is about that side that gives clubs like El Paso and what they were trying to do on Saturday? What do you think they're seeing that makes them want to try to attack that side? Now, obviously it wasn't working, but why did they keep going to that throughout the night?
Really, I don't know. I noticed that throughout the match that they kept trying. My thought is that they were trying to exploit Astorga to try to push up a little more and then get right past him. But he was solid on Saturday night. He was really good. He didn't make any major mistakes. He definitely kept his position and where he needed to be. Why they kept going to it, I don't know. Maybe they were hoping to catch him off guard, but it wasn't working.
So Jacob mentioned the play of us on the left wing as well. You look at, you know, how Dayon was playing and how he was able to get in behind. Do you think it was a mismatch for Dayon on that side? Do you think, obviously you talk about, I'm trying to exploit Astorga. Were we doing the same thing? Was it because of the positioning of their fullbacks? Or do you think Dayon and the midfield are just reading something into this and seeing opportunities to get in behind?
Dayon's just next level. I mean, he's on a different level compared to anybody. He's really good. And I think they use the same tactics that El Paso's trying to do with us, is exploit that side of the field, and their back isn't as fast as Dayon is, that's for sure. He's not as skilled defensively as Dayon is offensively. I mean, Dayon on the ball, I mean, you saw it pass there. He passed it past two people to Marco to score. I mean, he sees the play happening before it actually happens, and it's nice. It's some leadership that we have on the field without even having it be a leader.
Yeah, no, I agree. When you have someone that can make those sorts of reads, make those sorts of runs, and you see how on that run in the lead up to the goal, him dragging the center back out with him, leaving all that open space. And Jacob, you talked about the fact that, you know, there were guys in United who just backed away from the ball, let it go and let it lay. I'll back it up one more time. Like, if you go back and look at this, when it comes up, there's really not a whole lot of options there in the box for Dayon to get that ball too. Do you think, watching this, do you think he saw that run coming up from Marco, or do you think he was just playing it back across the box in the hopes that, you know, that someone would get on it?
Was that to me? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. No, I think it was, it's a planned kind of set play there, not a set play, but a tactic that they were wanting to bring out with Marco making that late run to the edge of the box. And if you have that clip of Marco talking about the goal, I had two clips of him talking about it, but in one of them, he mentions them working on him getting to that edge of the box and being prepared for something like that. And so I think it's definitely a planned thing where they're going to try to exploit the runners going forward and then having him come in and kind of clean up.
Yeah. Speaking of, I think we've got that here. Well, I think this is the right one.
Looks like it. I don't have sound. Do y'all have sound?
I thought this was like a lip reading challenge.
Is it not? Okay, hang on.
I don't hear anything.
All I thought I lost my hearing for a couple seconds.
First time doing this, guys. Hang with us. Marco on the mic is worth
it. To be honest, I was so happy I got to do it in front of the stand right here. You know, it was a massive reason why I came to the club, was because of the supporters. I wanted to walk into a stadium and I wanted to feel 9, 10, 11,000 people backing me, right? I'd never had that in my life, never. And so I told Gaffer, I told Peter, I told everybody, that's why I wanted to come to New Mexico. And so I would have loved to have scored in either goals, don't get me wrong, but to do it under this one here and to then be able to just... It was one of those, you don't get too many personal wins, but that felt like one. I got to fucking just go up and, you know, just soak it in. And that's what I made sure I did, and I don't think I'll forget that.
So with him cussing, does that allow me to cuss now?
Earl, when have we ever stopped you from cussing?
Yeah, have we ever stopped you?
So he doesn't mention it in that one, but he does mention it in another clip that I might have sent you, where it's something that they worked on him getting to the edge of the box. But what that clip there, like, if for those of you that are listening that were there, even though it was a little bit lower than usual, 9,000, you know, we didn't quite hit the 10,000 mark with the weather that we had, having that many, and then we were loud, like they were loud the whole match. And Marco mentions, like, that's the whole reason he came here, was he had never played in front of that many people. And so that's one of the main, if not the sole reason, obviously there's other reasons, but the main reason why he came to New Mexico United, and for him to score that, you could tell how much it meant to him. I've got another clip. I don't know if you've got it keyed up of him celebrating, but you could tell that it meant a lot of him.
Not that one.
That is a good one. It doesn't mean lots of good one.
I did not rename that one.
My bad.
Yeah. All good. So it must be this one. There you go. Yeah.
So he was fired up. He was fired up all night, and for good reason, of course.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You look at the way that he played, and he obviously contributed, you know, later on as well. But when you go back and you watch the way that this team played, and this was something that we have been, you know, dying to see. We've been dying to see that, you know, that last minute, you know, goal. We've been dying to see the full 90. And Earl, watching this performance, even when you did go back and watch it not live, like the rest of us, you know, what are some of your biggest takeaways here from how this club played down the stretch in this match?
Well, whenever, I don't even know who scored the first goal. I know they did. Well, I know we scored the first one. I don't remember who on El Paso scored that second goal.
It was Joaquin Rivas, and then
Rivas. He came off the bench and then scored like 6 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
When they scored, I said, okay, cool. We're going to take a draw. We'll take 1 point. And then when Amando scored, see, I was kind of in and out watching all of it at the same time. So when I saw that, I was like, all right, cool. Once Amando scored, it was already the 80-something, 87th minute, I think it was. I figured, all right, we're done. We're not walking away with anything on this one. But then we didn't stop, and we kept trying and kept trying and kept trying. And then Brucey and Jacobo come along, and those are my standout players. I know Jacob was asking for standouts. Those are my two standouts because they came in and they just turned the game upside down. When they came on and then we scored to make it 2-2, I figured, well, shit, we got a chance at this thing. And then getting that last goal, I felt the same emotion as I did Sunday night, where grown men go to cry.
Your bathroom? I mean, you're not giving a whole lot of context here, Earl. Like,
I'm talking about when Cody Rhodes won the title. Spoiler alert, by the way.
To be fair, Sunday night was very emotional for you, Earl, because, you know, your tribal chief lost his title. You'll get over it. It'll be okay. But, you know, I think riding high off the emotion of this match on Saturday, I think this is a huge moment. And we're still early in the season for this club. I think this gives them confidence going forward that, hey, we can come from behind. We can respond to these. And, you know, you Jacob, you had another clip here from Marco, and we'll pull that one up as well. That one I actually do have queued up, so.
Today was a prime example. And as I said, like, it's something that is installed with us Monday through Friday. And when we went 2-1 down, there was a general belief. We looked around, and I looked around at the boys, and everybody knew we was going to get at least one more chance, and we was going to take it away, because that's what good teams do, and we're a good team.
It's good to see that confidence. It really is, because, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I feel like in the past, and I think we've heard the players talk about it, where they do kind of drop their heads. They do kind of switch off at times in the past, but there's something different about this group. Is it Quill? Is it the players? Jacob, what do you think it is that's bringing out this belief in themselves more than what we've seen?
I think Marco mentions it in that clip. You know, it's a Monday through Friday thing. It's in training, the work that they have to put in and the depth that this team has. Like, you cannot take a training day off. If you take a training day off, the depth here is very, very good. And you could lose your spot like that if you have an off couple of days on the training pitch. And so that, mixed with this mentality that Quill and the coaching staff have. And I think the coaching staff, or the mentality of these players. I mean, you talk about Marco Micheletto coming from Columbus Crew 2. They win a championship there. Obviously, it's MLS Next Pro. I get it. It's not like the World Cup, but it's still a trophy playing against their peers. He was also a captain of that team. You have Talon Maples, Houston Dynamo 2, was a captain of that team. You have all these pieces that are coming in that are top quality, have the mentality of, no, we're going to get this done. And we've seen that. Now, obviously, the Rhode Island match notwithstanding, and the Columbus Crew match, or not Columbus Crew, Charleston Battery match notwithstanding, we've seen the fight and the grit in these 1-0 wins against Pittsburgh and Phoenix, in Phoenix nonetheless, and then tonight. I mean, I've never had a club that I follow go down in the, this is the penalty here. It happens in like the 82nd minute, 87th minute. I don't remember. 87th,
yeah.
80, just over, just into the 87th minute is when he who shall not be named scores this PK. And the feeling in the stadium was just dejection. I mean, it was just, you can almost see it there where the flags are flying, and then not all of them, but 90% of them, when he scores, just stop. And I was on the other side of the pitch, and you could just hear like an audible, like the air just being sucked out. And for them to turn around, and then 2 minutes later, Marco does this, and Reyes gets on the end of it after coming in, being that super sub that we talked about. Josh brings up a good point, though. I was sitting on the far side with another gentleman that I'm not going to out right now. But me and him were both sitting there saying, like, where are the subs? Like, before they even took the lead, it was like, where are the subs? Like, in the 80th minute, before they even really scored, it was, where are the subs? And, I mean, it worked out in the end. I would have liked to have seen some subs sooner, but the subs come on. Jacobo Reyes, who we saw be instrumental in the goal against Pittsburgh, comes in and makes a beautifully timed run and gets on the end of a Marco ball and puts it in. Do you have that clip keyed up by chance? Marco talks about Reyes here.
Me and Jacobo, like, we click. He knows where I want the ball and I know where he wants the ball. It was in a moment of the game where we needed to get something. So I remember I looked up and I was just trying to squeeze something somewhere, and we made a quick eye contact and I knew where it was, where he wanted to go. But make no mistake about it, as much as I'm proud of that ball, what a finish, because that is a tough, tough goal. Come the ball coming over your shoulder to head it over the So Okobo was fantastic, but I love playing with him. He's a fantastic player, what can I say?
So, I mean, that eye contact and then putting the ball, I mean, that's insane. That play from where he's at on the field for that to happen, I mean, we're just going to watch it. I'm just going to be speechless and watch it for a second. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Nasty.
Yeah, the placement on that cross, the placement on the header, and like Marco said, that is not easy.
No, and they linked up. They made that eye contact. He knew where he wanted it, like you said, and I love it. I love
he's,
it.
He's just flat footed, like he just stuck.
Yeah, like he's just standing there, and he's just like, oh, okay, here you go, inch perfect ball over the back line.
Yeah,
and my favorite thing, it drives me nuts when our players do it, but I love to see it when El Paso does it. Is that hand going up before the play is even over? Mm-hmm. Be like, oh no, you and then the flag doesn't come. You don't get saved just because you think it's offside. It's got to actually be offside, and it was not. I can guarantee you it was not. And so, just absolutely beautiful, the ability by Marco throughout the match, by Reyes and Brucey coming on, just. It's something that you don't see. I mean, we have this here. Brucey's like by himself. Look at that. There's four white shirts before Nicky comes into the picture and plays it perfectly. And then Nicky with an incredible finish. If you go back or if you watch that again, you can see two little pink shirts behind the goal right after we score. There's going to be one on your left and one on your right. And they start running towards each other. You can kind of see them start running towards each other there. They're the two ball boys. They like jump hugged, like just were ecstatic. And a tear came to my eye, bro. I mean, it was just such a crazy moment to go from when he who shall not be named scores the penalty and my head just dropped and I was so dejected and just like, not to say like once the game started back up, I had some hope. But in that moment, as soon as he scores, just, oh man, it was just so rough. And to go from that to all of a sudden scoring twice in like a 2.5 minute span, the emotions were just all, I mean, I was a wreck. The whole stadium was a wreck. And for it to be like, if this happened literally any other time in any other match, it would be an incredible feeling.
Yeah.
But for it to be El Paso.
Yeah.
Just meant so much to everybody in the stadium, including myself, just because how much we despise El Paso.
And I want to bring this up. You talk about Deion Speed in the 98th minute. He's still outrunning people, or not Deion. It was on the left at that point. That was
Brucey was over there, and then Nicky comes in
for this last shot.
Here. Oh, the last one.
Yeah, who was that?
Oh, who is that? I think it's I can't not remember. It happened right in front of me. It's got to be Gloucester.
It's Gloucester.
Yeah, it's got to be Gloucester.
It's a Gloucester who'd been out there for the full 90, outpacing people out there on the left wing. I know it wasn't Deion because he's already out. But
yeah,
yeah. Speaking of which, we're gonna talk about Deion here in a minute. But I mean, we saw Brucey play the 9 last year, several different opportunities, and here we see him come in once again for Greg Hurst. Now, obviously, Brucey didn't get a goal in this one. But the impact that he had on this match for even the final, what it ended up being in 9 minutes of stoppage time in the second half, which I thought was just ridiculously too long. I mean, to be fair, we have one goal on stoppage time and that was it. There should have been.
Maybe, yeah, but there was 30 seconds. There was the PK. Nicky celebrated that pretty good. Cause I think they called for 8 to begin with, right?
7.
Okay.
Yeah. An extra 2 minutes. I think that was really pushing it. And I'm sitting here going, blow the damn whistle. Like this one needs to be over.
By that time I had moved right over to where Nicky and them celebrated right in front of that corner. And while I was standing there, everybody was like, blow the whistle for like the last 5 minutes of the match.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But Earl, I mean, looking at Brucey and how he played tonight, I can't think of a reason to. I have a hard time putting Brucey on the bench. But is this now Brucey's role to come in and be super sub rotation guy? And if this is the kind of impact that we expect to see from him throughout the rest of the season, I think I'm okay with that. I mean, looking at what he did in just a few minutes he had. What are your thoughts on Brucey and his almost new role with the club?
Do I like seeing Brucey on the bench? No, I don't. But yes, he is owning that spot as if it's his. And he proved it on Saturday where he came in and he made one of the biggest impacts of the matches, where he had the assist that was the game winner. Where he was the game winning assist, pretty much. So Brucey coming on off the bench is a good spot because he is ferocious and he's tenacious. Like, he doesn't stop going. So he's essentially a carbon copy of Tenari plus like four other Tenaris added in there.
I would be more offensive minded than Tenari, but the tenacity there is definitely good.
Either way. I like him coming off the bench just because of his energy that he brings off the bench that catches the opposing team off guard. I mean, it's El Paso. We played them a million and a half times. I think they're practically our wives at this point. But we bring Brucey off the bench and he still surprises them and makes some kind of statement.
Yeah, no, great performance by Brucey. I'm surprised Marco Micheletto did not get team of the week. He had an honorable mention.
He's on the bench.
Yeah, I felt like he should have been in the starting 11.
I was surprised to not see him.
Yeah.
On the team of the week for sure.
While we're there, quickly shout out to former New Mexico United players Alexi Swahi and Justin Portillo, both making team of the week last week. So shout out to them. Great performance by Tulsa. That was a lot of fun to watch. I don't know if you guys saw it or not.
But I did watch that on Friday night. It was pretty good. Swahi gets on the score sheet. Portillo has two assists. I mean, really good showing. Swahi's one that I really wish we would have held on to. But I think he needed to get some confidence. He went down to League One last year and was League One Defender of the Year, if I'm not mistaken, and then is able to come up and get a chance with Tulsa. A lot of the times there's three former New Mexico United players on Tulsa, because Tete usually starts for them too. He was not in the 18 though. So, but yeah, shout out to them for sure.
Yeah. Plus they sold us the points for Phoenix Rising. So, you know, we'll definitely take that every day of the week. But so we've talked about a lot of the good. Okay, we talked about a lot of the good things that Mexico United did. We talked about the pace. We talked about, you know, the passes that we've seen. We talked about the improved play through the midfield. What were some of the issues that we saw? What did we not do well against El Paso on Saturday night? I mean, what were our weak spots, and where do you think that we could have done a little bit better, Jacob?
Well, I think I can't necessarily pinpoint exactly, like, tactically what it was. In the post-game presser, Coach Quill and Marco talk about it in other clips that we don't have queued up here, where Coach specifically said, you know, we scored that seventh minute goal and he was really hoping to see us, you know, build on that and kind of take over. And instead he said we, for whatever reason, kind of shut down and let El Paso control the match. And that's exactly what happened. And so that was tough to see. Marco mentions it too. He's talks about in another clip where he's really happy about scoring that goal, but he was really disappointed in the next 35 minutes of that half after scoring that goal and seeing El Paso kind of get chance after chance. I mean, Amando had like four shots in the first half and luckily couldn't put one away, but they were there down that left side, like you mentioned, El Paso's left side. And you asked Earl about it earlier, but I think they're attacking that left side because, you know, we play with the back four. But in possession, Astorga really gets up, and Gloucester doesn't. Gloucester kind of stays back. So that right side isn't really open because you got Gloucester over there, and then you've got the two center backs in the middle of the pitch. Whereas with Astorga bombing forward, it leaves that space. And I think it's something that we obviously are aware of. It's a game plan that we want to have with Astorga coming forward. And we've done a fairly good job of, yes, they get to that space, but we are organized enough in the back to not let them getting into that space end up hurting us. I think tonight or Saturday night was probably the worst that we've seen as far as defensively on that, from that aspect. We saw it against Pittsburgh quite a bit, but other than that first little flurry of corners in the first few minutes, they would get to that space, but then we were able to have enough speed and number and bodies get back to where they couldn't exploit it in any way, shape, or form. But Amando had a few good looks coming from that side, and Amando had a few good dribbles where he beat a player here and there to create something. And so all in all, I think the defense, it's hard to say the defense played well in a game that you give up two goals, but kind of like last year, those were two goals that were just two moments of brain farts, for lack of a better term. I mean, it's just, it's one where we have plenty of numbers back, but Justin Dillon, who's a big talented guy, is able to get past Talon on the dribble and get into space. And it's just, once you get compromised like that, it's hard to make up for it. So I'm not going to put it all on Talon, obviously, but even the best defenders, I think, get beat one-on-one every once in a while. And so it sucked and it happened and we moved on. And then the penalty was just Zico getting a little too aggressive there. We had plenty of numbers back. We had plenty of bodies between, I think it was Dillon that got fouled again, or was it Dillon or was it Rivas? Rivas, I don't remember. One of those two big guys. We had plenty of numbers between him and the ball, or him and the goal. And Zico just kind of sticks a foot in there, kind of willy-nilly, shouldn't have done it. And it's going to be a foul every time if there's contact and the guy goes down in that situation. So just two moments of letting down. So I think my biggest thing was we've seen this team attack and attack and attack and attack, even like Pittsburgh, right? We score in like the 15th minute or 17th minute or something like that. I might be way off. I don't remember for sure, but we scored fairly early in the first half. No, we scored late in the first half. I don't remember.
40th minute.
Okay. So we score and then we keep attacking. And for whatever reason on Saturday, we scored and then we just kind of like shut off. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's just emotions running really high and we get the lead, and I don't know what it is, but that to me was what we could have done better, was stayed with that attacking mindset that we've had for the first five matches here and continue that even after going 1-0 up, and we didn't do that, which is a problem, I think. But Quill mentions it, Marco mentions it, and so it's something that I can guarantee you will get addressed in the next 2 weeks before our next league match.
Earl, what about you? What's something that stood out to you? We talked about the positives. What was something you saw as an issue on Saturday night?
Jacob nailed it on the head. I mean, and it sucks because it's kind of a broken record here, but as soon as we scored, we kind of hit the brakes a little bit. Definitely laid back and tried to, I guess, soak it in that we scored a goal. I don't know what happened, but it was obvious that El Paso took control during those 25 to 30 minutes where I think after we scored, Amando had two shots in the next 5-10 minutes. So we definitely kind of laid back a little bit to see how they'd respond, and then kind of pulled our head out and then decided to finish the game.
All right. We got one more clip from Marco before we move on. And I want to play this for you guys here real quick. And this, I believe this is Marco talking about the rivalry, which obviously played a big factor in this weekend rivalry match. A lot was made of Amando Moreno and his return, but here's what Marco had to say.
Really cool. I'm Italian, where rivalries are all over. Like, I'm a big Roma fan. Today we won the derby. We won the derby tonight again. It's not lost on me what it means to the people. I like to put myself in their shoes and understand, you know, I want to go home and make sure that these guys go home thinking like, yeah, we won our rivalry game, you know. Obviously, look, I've been here 20 minutes. I'm not going to be like, yeah, I feel it in my blood.
Right.
But when I wear this crest, then I have to represent these people, and these people don't like those people. And, you know, then I'm out there doing everything I can to make sure that this wins.
So, I mean, taking into account what Marco said here about the rivalry and looking at the importance of the derby and looking at the return of Amando Moreno, I mean, obviously Moreno gave a bit of a
celebration?
Was his
return, did it live up to the hype? Did the match itself live up to the hype? Did the rivalry, does it make the rivalry more intense now that we have him playing down there? You know, I know there's a couple of different questions in there, but however you want to attack this portion of it.
So one, he pointed to the El Paso fans. Mm-hmm. That's all he did. And then he did not partake in anything. He did show some class there. That being said, I don't know, man. It felt a little, as far as like on the pitch and the players on the pitch, it kind of felt a little lesser, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I think with two clubs that come in, like for El Paso, we didn't have Borelli, who's an instigator. Mm-hmm. We didn't have Yuma, who's an instigator. We didn't have, you know, Hamilton or Suggs, some of these players that have been in the thick of this for several years. And then Brucey, who's been here obviously the longest, doesn't start. And then we have a ton of new blood on both sides of the pitch in this rivalry. And so we didn't see the chippiness that we normally see. And I think part of that, honestly, was Amando going over there. I think the players that we have on our team obviously might be upset with him going over there, but have respect for him for the 4 years that he spent in black and yellow with us. And so I didn't see a whole lot of back and forth with him and any of our players. I didn't see a whole lot of back and forth with their back line and our forwards or their keeper and our forwards. Cause it's just a lot of new blood. And so like Josh says, I mean, it was way chippier against Phoenix. And I think especially with the way El Paso has been just quality wise the last couple of years, especially since Quill's been there, then I wonder if the players don't see them as big of a challenge as they do Phoenix at times. So it was kind of weird. Obviously the fans, it still meant the world to the fans. You could feel that for sure. But
clearly but yeah. Eighth Notch was upset.
Oh, well, okay. I thought about sending you this clip mm-hmm. to play on the pod, but I didn't. But my boy Phil, who looks a shit ton like Earl after watching that video, like kind of weird looking like Earl. They did a live watch along with Seriously Loco over there. And when Nikki scores, I've watched that clip probably 40 times. And that's not an exaggeration.
Great. Is that the one that you sent to us?
Yeah, yeah. When Phil says fuck my life after Nikki scores.
I haven't watched it yet. Been a little busy.
Yeah. Bro, it's a 30-second clip. We've been here for 43 and a half minutes. You could have watched it at least once since then.
So at this point, Earl, does this rivalry feel like it's being carried more by the supporters than it is any of the action on the pitch?
No, I think release the clip.
I'll send it to you, Josh.
How about this, Josh?
No, I'm gonna email it to you right now, Seth. You gotta play.
Okay. Yeah.
I was gonna say we're gonna put it on our social media, but that's cool too.
No, I mean, we can start. Yeah.
So to answer your question, no, I think the rivalry is still on the pitch as well. It's just like Jacob said, we're missing a lot of key players that have played the 5 years of the rivalry. I mean, Josh Suggs, Devin Sandoval, Bees. I mean, all the big names that played El Paso throughout the pandemic, before the pandemic, the Yuma, the Borellis, the Richie Ryans, the list goes on and on. And then you're looking at the newer faces. I mean, you're missing Kalen, who is the heartbeat of the back line and definitely very chippy when it comes to El Paso. So it's not that the on-pitch rivalry is dying out. It's that it was missing very key pieces of the aspect of the rivalry to, I'm just trying to buy time until Seth gets that thing loaded. it was missing very key pieces that make the rivalry what it actually is.
Bruce going forward. Hernandez. Fuck my life.
Oh my God.
Look at the dejection.
So y'all saw it. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
This guy on the right wants to cry.
And this is partly why Phil will never, ever come on our show more than likely.
No, I'm playing this because he never tries. He never reaches out whatsoever. Oh, man. So good. So good.
So, you know, eighth notch, seriously loco, seriously dejected after Saturday night. But I think that's going to just about do it for our discussion on New Mexico United taking the win over El Paso by a final score of 3-2. We don't have a match this week.
We don't. So real quick, real quick. Being there in person, I'm very sad that neither of you guys were there. It was to experience it with nine thousand other fans was absolutely crazy. It was a night. I tweeted it. I think it was a tweet. I don't remember. Social media is a blur. I've seen some pretty cool stuff in person. And I don't think anything's going to top that as far as sports moments. I mean, it was absolutely insane. And so shout out to the 9,000 people that were there. And I hope you didn't leave early because that would have been a bummer.
Exactly. I should be at the next home game. So I can't wait. But yeah, it's going to be a minute before that happens. But quickly before we move on, around the Western Conference after the weekend, Orange County and Sac Republic both still sit atop the West on 11 points. Each side picked up a win at the weekend. Orange County 2-0 over Memphis 901 and Sacramento Republic 2-0 over Switchbacks. Obviously, New Mexico United sits third on 10 points after the win over El Paso. Las Vegas Lights sitting fourth right now with their third consecutive win in a row. San Antonio dropped some points this weekend. They are in fifth. Yeah, Monterey Bay in sixth after picking up their second win of the season. They got Rising seventh on 4 points. Tulsa on 4 points as well, down in eighth. And then you've got Oakland Roots, Memphis 901, 4 points, 3 points, respectively. El Paso with 1 point through five matches. And Colorado Switchbacks, winless, the only winless team, pointless team, I should say, the only pointless team in the entire USL Championship at this point.
So Harry asked a question before the match was over on Saturday. Who was worse, El Paso or Colorado? Your guys' thoughts on that question?
Oh boy. Right now, I have to say Colorado.
Agreed.
I have to say Colorado right now. Like I'm terribly disappointed in what they've been doing so far. El Paso showing a bit of life, but I'm not seeing any sort of heartbeat out of Colorado right now.
Agreed.
So. All right.
Josh, Seth is planning on being out there. Mm-hmm. I would love to try to make it. I still might try. There's a few days between now and then that I might change my mind, but we'll have to see. I really wanted to go. I wanted to go to Lubbock. If it was in Lubbock, I would have been there for sure. To go to Rio Rancho, obviously, it's mainly I wanted to go to Lubbock just for the experience of going on an away trip. But we will see.
If you're
going to
be there, I can get you some photo credits.
Where?
At
the game?
At the game. I can get you some photo credits because I'm going to be doing like pulling that quadruple duty next week.
if I can, I'll let you know.
Yeah,
but
perfect.
But so I didn't ask you, I didn't prep you guys this whatsoever, but looking at the East and the West, if you would, who's your top five clubs in the league right now?
I'd say Loose Ditty's dangerous, so I'm gonna put Loose City in my top five. Detroit City is looking good. Battery, I don't know if Battery is going to be consistent enough, but I like what Battery is doing right now.
So I don't know if you saw this, but Battery beat Loose City 3-2 tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know if you knew that or if it changes your opinion at all, but that is something that happened.
Yeah,
No, they're both playing well. They really are. And so I think I have to include both of them despite Lou City's loss today. And then I haven't seen much of Orange County and Sac Republic yet this year. I need to go back and watch some of their matches. But I would probably say us and Sac. Because I don't think Orange County's is going to be sustainable. I could be completely wrong. I mean, again, I need to go back and watch some of what they've done. But that's where I'm at right now.
Earl, do you want to tackle this or you want me to jump in there?
It's too much for me to think.
Okay, good, good, good. Yeah, I think, I mean, I think the top five in some order are probably Lou City, Charleston, and then Lou City, Charleston. I think I would have Sacramento up there. Just because they have that sustain. They come off a really good year last year. They add Trevor Amon, who's been fantastic for them. And they're sitting there with 11 points. They haven't lost yet. So I don't see how you could knock them down yet. And then the next two spots, so Detroit City, Orange County, and us, it's really tight. I think I would love to put us up there, but with some of the, you know, we have a 4-0 loss on there. We didn't look great against El Paso at times. We found a way to gut out performance or wins and get those performances that we need, but we haven't dominated per se. We haven't had a 2-goal win like every other team on this list has. So I think I'd probably go, even with the loss today, because they were heavily rotated to begin the match today, I'd have Lou City and then probably Charleston and then Sacramento and then Orange County, Detroit City, or Detroit City, Orange County. Welcome. That's okay. Honestly, I dropped the ball today big time. I didn't put a post out this morning and I didn't put a post out right before we started because life. But glad you're here. Glad you're here. Yeah.
Quickly before we promised Earl, we're going to do WrestleMania. We're going to close out the show at WrestleMania. Did either of you watch the USL match between Lou City and Indy 11 on CBS on Saturday? Did either of you watch it?
I watched a couple minutes of it, but like I said, to start the show, my first marriage is to WWE. And second marriage is to soccer. So I watched the first like half and then turned on the pre show for WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. I like it on CBS. I mean, their quality of stream is crystal fucking clear.
Yeah. I watched the whole thing, from the intro to the final whistle, and it looked incredible. Devin Kerr and Mike Watts were fantastic on the call. I know some people have issues with them. I think they're great. There was one. Jack Blake scored a penalty. Mm-hmm. And Mike Watts goes, so his hips did in fact lie. And Devin Kerr was just fucking crickets. And I died. But
yeah.
And what a performance on the pitch for it to be the first match on CBS leading into the final four. I mean, it couldn't have played out better. I mean, the production quality was top notch. The match itself, I mean, 8 goals. Lynn Family Stadium is one of the best looking stadiums on TV anyways. And then you had everything was just fantastic about it. I'm really excited for it. Hopefully we can get more matches on CBS like next year. I'm very, very, very curious to see what the numbers are for this match. It's Tuesday. They should be out. I just don't know where to find that kind of stuff unless somebody puts it on my Twitter feed. And so I might have to dig in and look at that, but it was fantastic. Josh, it had to have been connection issues because I watched it on my TV and it was just freaking gorgeous. So just a great thing for the USL. The game tonight was on CBS Sports Network. It looked really good tonight too. Just the quality of everything in the USL is just kind of going up and up and up. Something that I've talked about with some others, both in person and in DMs and stuff, is the quality of this league, like the product on the pitch itself too. The quality is just, I mean, from 2019 to now, it's just loads better. I mean, we talk about having a deeper team today than we did in 2019, but I think the whole club, the whole league is kind of deeper. And obviously there's three or four less teams with the MLS two teams leaving and then some other teams, rest in peace, Reno, Tulsa Roughnecks. Obviously we have FC Tulsa now, but rest in peace some of those clubs. But the product on the pitch is just spectacular, and it deserves what CBS gave it, honestly. I mean, could you imagine if that El Paso match was on CBS with that kind of quality? I mean, that would have been like top-notch television in that particular moment. So, I think it's a great thing. I think it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was great to see, great broadcast, and I can't wait to see more of USL on CBS.
I want to shout out Jane here. The Nikki celebration, she said, was nearly right in front of her. She was crying too, so I wasn't the only one that shed tears after Nikki scored. I wanted to make sure that you guys knew that I wasn't the only one there. And she's also talking about rewatching it on KOAT at 10:30, which, if you guys didn't know that, all the matches, I think it's all the matches, or at least the home matches, are being rebroadcast at 10:30 after the 10 o'clock news on Channel 7 here locally. So that's a really cool thing. And I wish I would have known you were there, Jane. Cause I was right there too. I would have tried to find you, but next match for sure. Sorry. We've gone about an hour. I think it's about time, unless you got anything else, Seth. No. Should I close it out properly for the people that don't want to stick around for the wrestling content?
I say go for it.
Okay. Earl, you got anything else soccer related? Cool. All right.
Nope.
So at this point, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, we will be transitioning. Well, let me rephrase that. Seth and Earl will be transitioning to talk about WrestleMania while I make fun of them for doing it. So with that being said, next week, kind of up in the air, the Open Cup match is going to be on Tuesday at 7. So it will still be going on at our normal time of 8 o'clock. Seth is planning on being there. So we might reschedule for a different night, maybe Wednesday or Thursday night, or me and Earl might push through. We might kind of do a live watch along at 8 o'clock while we preview in North Carolina FC and talk about maybe the first half of Lubbock. We haven't quite nailed down those details yet, but we will. So keep an eye out for our social media, probably over the weekend. We'll let you guys know. But in the meantime, everybody that was in the chat, Josh, Jane, whoever else I'm forgetting over here, thank you guys so much. It was a great night. It was an amazing win. I couldn't have scripted it any better. So hopefully we can continue that. It's nice to look at the table and see being third, you know, three wins already, undefeated at home. It's a great start so far to Quill's first full season. And this team does feel different. It really does feel different from top to bottom. So we'll be looking forward to that. So next week, if you haven't heard, Lubbock Matadors, Rio Rancho High School, 7 o'clock. Tickets went on sale today, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of them, so you probably want to get yours as soon as possible if you want to go to that match. Otherwise, we've got North Carolina FC in 2 weeks, or 2.5 weeks, 2 weekends, whatever you want to do, however you want to look at that. So tune in again, or tune into the social media for what we're going to do next week, and until the next time we come on, Somos Unidos, and if you want to listen to wrestling, stick around, because it was like a 9-hour show over the weekend, and we'll probably be here for about 11 hours discussing it. So we love you guys, and Somos Unidos.
All right, so let's get to it. Let's do it. If you're sticking around, obviously the granddaddy of them all,
WrestleMania. So first off, Jacob's wrong, because it was not 9 hours.
It was longer, wasn't it?
It was fucking 12.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. The granddaddy of all, one of the best WrestleManias I've ever seen, if not the best WrestleMania. WrestleMania 40 happened over the weekend, if you're not a wrestling fan. What you need to know, number one, WrestleMania is now a two-night event. It's spread out over the course of a weekend, and then now includes NXT. We've got WWE Speed, which is happening on Wednesdays. We've got, you know, a two-night main event. You had Bloodline, you had Cody, you had Rock, you had, you know, Jake, you had Logan Paul. You had all sorts of championships changing hands. I mean, Earl, I mean, I don't know where you want to start with this. Obviously, you're the bigger fan of the three of us, but and we threw a whole bunch of puns out last week on the show. People finished their stories. As just a Truth finished his story. Congratulations to R-Truth and The Miz. I mean, so many things happened over this past weekend. I mean, Earl, where do you want to go with this?
I'm gonna ramble real quick. Obviously, I have a 6-year-old who's trying to sleep, so I'm gonna make it quick and painless for real us, quick. At least.
I did watch the Reigns Cody Rhodes match on Sunday night. That's literally all I watched of the thing. I looked at the results, an article about the results on Saturday, but I didn't watch any. So unless we talk about that, or until we talk about that match, I'm not going to be able to contribute any. I will just sit here and make fun of you.
Yeah. So Saturday was kind of and if you watch the presser because I watched the pressers too. So if you watch the pressers.
So you took in like 30 hours over the weekend of wrestling content. My goodness.
I sure did. I definitely took the wrestling needle and went straight in.
For those of you listening still, if I were to show you the group messages that we have with me, Seth, Earl, and Harry, from whatever time on Saturday that it started, and even before
Jacob's nowhere to be found,
all the way through Sunday late night, it's literally 98% wrestling. And then in the middle of one of the best matches in New Mexico United history, there are three text messages about it, and they're all from me to the group. So
anyways.
We know where these two hearts really lied this weekend.
Like I told you, wrestling was my first marriage. Soccer came second.
That hurts. It was El Paso.
you know what else came first before New Mexico
Nikki
United?
Nikki talks about the Shield. This Shield is where it's at.
Yeah. What also came before New Mexico United?
You did, apparently, since you're having a baby.
Meatloaf. That too.
Look, anyways. It's the wrestling part of the pod. We're off the rails. Like, I'm not doing anything to keep this on track. So I'm you guys either. Can boot me, but I'm going to be all over the place.
So anyways, we're going to start where it all started. Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch.
I know
that was a decent match. It was a very decent match.
I kind of felt like
Becky was. Are we seriously going to go match by match?
No.
Okay.
Becky didn't seem okay in that match. I could be wrong. But.
She. I read something. I'm going to bring something to this pod. She had time. The flu.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it. Maybe there was something else.
102 fever.
Yeah, she had the flu. Yes, I contributed.
There you go.
I'll be back in a minute. I contribute.
So let's talk. Just pretty much. So the 6-pack match, the ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly thought that we're gonna see some kind of legend return, like the Hardys or the Dudleys, the Hardys or the Dudleys. That obviously didn't happen, which I'm okay with. Because this first night was nothing but emotional runs, like emotional jabs at your heart. Seeing DIY come out as DX.
Yeah, that was
fucking great. That was fucking great. And obviously, Justin, you said it, Truth finishing his story. I mean, that's his first major title.
And hey,
in the 20 something years he's been with the company,
the tag titles are back with Judgment Day.
Anyways, seeing Truth get his moment, that was great. then later on in the match, later on the night, I want to say the very, no, we're going to skip the Rey Mysterio match. It's Rey Mysterio.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of old. And then that's night two.
Hence the tags under our names tonight.
Yeah. The Jimmy and Jey Uso match, that was very, very subpar. I think they cut it too short.
Way too many super kicks.
They build it brother versus brother. They cut that one way too far down. The one I want to talk about, though,
mm-hmm.
Maya's going to kill me because I'm not talking about women's wrestling. I want to talk about the Sami Zayn shit.
Mm. Okay.
Sami Zayn, night one, went to war with probably Jacob's only fan, Gunther.
You're muted.
Yes.
Gunther.
There you go.
I freaking love Gunther, dude. He's massive. He's like my favorite dude.
He's really good. I expect him to get a main title push, like a championship put, a WWE championship push, or World Heavyweight Championship push, whatever's going to be on Raw after the draft. But Sami Zayn. Yeah.
So okay, yeah. There's
do
a
they
draft,
do a draft like every year.
Yeah,
they do. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you usually the day that was like a rare thing? It was like a every four or five
every
years
4 or 5 year thing. Now it's a every year thing. They switch it all up, try to keep it fresh, which I like because sometimes rivalries get old, especially if you're a champion for 1,300 days. Who else do you have to beat except yourself?
So let me ask you this real quick. Do you think I can't imagine they put Cody on SmackDown? I can't imagine they put him there. So I've got to think whoever more Priest, I have to think Priest and Judgment Day are going to SmackDown.
Yeah, I think Judgment Day goes to SmackDown. If not, they break up Judgment Day and put Priest himself on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. I think Priest can handle it. Kendall can handle himself alone. I don't think he needs the backing of Finn Balor, Rhea Ripley, Dom, and JD McDonagh and R-Truth. Because the fans said it last night. Yes, R-Truth is in Judgment Day. I don't care what you say. He's fucking in there. But Sami Zayn and Gunther. I mean, Sami Zayn has worked his ass off for the past 12 years that he's been with WWE. And he's never had a major WrestleMania moment. Seeing him do it in front of his family, that fucking tore me. I was tears falling down my face. Yeah, I mean, Sami Zayn, I hope he has a decent run with the championship and it's not just a quick turnaround.
Quickly on that, there's no chance that they're going to have him drop the title in Montreal next week to Chad Gable.
No, okay. No way. And then the Sami Zayn or the main event, we're going to talk about The Rock, Roman Reigns versus Seth freaking Rollins and Cody Rhodes. Let me start off with this. I fucking hate The Rock.
He's been so good.
Yeah.
I fucking hate
him. This heel turn has been so good.
Like he's definitely playing his character. I get that. But I do not like his fucking character. I don't.
Did you watch the documentary?
That is the whole point. The whole point is that you hate him. And so he's doing a fantastic
job. I know. He's doing his job, that's for sure. But there was one part of the match where The Rock told the ref,
mm-hmm.
if you count me out, or if you count, you're fired. You know The Rock. I don't fuck around. I feel at this point, I'm going to sidetrack just a little bit. I feel fucking horrible for Peacock Network.
Look,
Friday night.
Everything is already on streaming. Why bleep everything?
So Friday night. They had a deal with Paul Heyman.
That was fun.
Telling people to suck his fucking dick.
That dude, his induction was phenomenal.
It definitely was. How he beat the fucking phone over fucking Sting's head. I mean, I feel bad for Peacock because they had that, and then they had to deal with The Rock. Saturday night telling the ref that he'll be fucking fired. Mm-hmm. He's a rock. He don't fuck around. Justin, I can't wait for it to go to Netflix too, because then I don't have to wait till Tuesday on Hulu to watch Monday Night Raw. I can just watch it live as it happens. Which also, Netflix will be streaming all the premium live events as well. That was something that just came out. Mm-hmm. So it looks like they're cutting ties with Peacock and moving to Netflix, which is nice because then it's more edgier content where you can actually say fuck. But then The Rock just doing his thing and whipping the shit out of Cody Rhodes.
I was happy with the fact that there was no interference Saturday night.
Yeah, I was definitely happy with that. But I mean,
that was not the case Sunday night.
Yeah, so the interference came within the match. Like, it was its own interference with the fucking Rock doing his own fucking thing, which is cool. You know what? It's fine. I'm happy with... I was okay with night one. It was definitely a 7 out of 10, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he just said there. But then night two.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't muted. I was yelling at a dog. Sorry.
No, I think he's talking about Justin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then we get night two, where we have Stephanie McMahon, who comes out, and as Triple H and the presser, she still looks good.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with her being almost like 900 years old. She looks good still.
Who?
Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, biggest crush on her back in the day.
Stephanie, if you see her now, you probably still have it. The Seth Rollins Drew McIntyre match, I seriously think
Seth hurt.
I think he picked up a legitimate injury.
Mm-hmm.
He is taking a hiatus, so I have a feeling he picked up a serious injury to where they had to drop it to Drew, and then turn around and do the cash in because they need Drew to have his moment at Clash of the Castle Scotland.
Well, now to be fair about this, I do want to say this. Damien has tried to cash in the Money in the Bank about 13,000 times since he won it last year, and they've failed miserably to do so every single time. Oh, I know.
His Money in the Bank run was definitely a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It was not serious. I think they had to do something with him. If you download the NBC app, you link it to your Hulu, you can watch Raw based on the East Coast time, and it starts at 6 our time, ends at 9. Okay. Can you send that to me in Messenger? Even if you do it on... I mean, you can just send it to me personally. That's cool, too. But carrying on. The street fight, we're going to pass over because that was subpar. You got Gangster Joe Jacob over there. The LA Knight, yeah. We'll pass them out. It was better than what they hyped it to be. It was better than what they hyped it to be. But LA Knight and AJ Styles are too subpar to where I didn't really care about that match.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens, Logan Paul, Randy Orton. I'm gonna leave it with one sentence. Two sentences. I cannot stand Logan Paul, but he's fucking talented.
Yeah, he is. He has really taken to WWE and, you know, the fans and the interaction. As much as fans hate him, like, he through his experience with YouTube and everything else, he knows how to work a crowd. He knows how to get people's attention. And he legitimately is bringing views to WWE without it. And then the fact that he brings guys like Triple H onto his podcast, and they talk about some of the things, like in one of the more recent episodes, they talked about like how late the story came together, and it talks about in the documentary too about how the story finished for Cody and how that storyline evolved and The Rock got involved. Like, it was, he's bought into it. I don't think this is just a thing for him. It's not like a fly by night thing. I mean, he's been with the company, what, almost a year now?
A little over a year, yeah.
A little over a year, yeah. I was going to say, I think he's legitimately bought into it.
And then obviously the reason why everyone watched and the reason why there was 11 million people watching on Sunday night. Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it. I got your message. The Roman Reigns Cody Rhodes match, bloodline rules, which whatever the fuck that means.
Basically no disqualification. That's really all.
Those two together put on a freaking show. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It was back and forth with Roman Reigns' 1,300-day streak or 1,316-day streak. You kind of didn't expect him to lose. But then you don't expect them to screw Cody over and not finish the story. So it was, I was very, very torn. I've been a huge Cody Rhodes fan since he was in Legacy with Randy Orton and Ted DiBiase, if we can even say that name. But it was, it had me on the edge of my seat the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected outside interference because it's the bloodline. I wasn't sure what outside interference to expect from Cody Rhodes' side. I had heard rumors and rumors and rumors. So we obviously knew Jimmy Uso would interfere.
Mm-hmm.
So I expected Jey Uso. We expected Solo. So I expected John Cena. Because Solo was John Cena's last rival, last feud. I expected The Rock as the final boss. He's the last guy to come out, tear apart the show. The person I didn't expect was The Undertaker. Who I expected to show up there was Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
Given the Stone Cold Rock, Austin Rock rivalry for 5 WrestleManias in a row. Seeing The Undertaker was nice. It was cool. But I think it was a little underhyped given the magnitude of the main event. And obviously Seth Rollins coming out in the Shield. That was, I expect to see Dean Ambrose for a little bit. That didn't happen, obviously. But then the ending, that's the part that got me.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm a huge wrestling fan, I remember when Seth Rollins screwed over the Shield and dismantled the Shield with one swing of a chair. With Roman Reigns needing to get revenge on Seth Rollins instead of take Cody Rhodes out and keep his title, that was the definition of WrestleMania moment. So if you haven't watched, I'm sorry, I'm about to ruin it for you. If you have watched, awesome. I'm glad you watched, along with 11 million other people. Seth Rollins is in the ring still. Roman Reigns has a chair. He has the chance to take out Cody Rhodes with the chair, pin him, keep the title. Instead, he looks over. He sees Seth Rollins standing up, facing the audience. And Cody Rhodes takes a chair shot to the back as if it was 2012 Shield. Yeah, Seth Rollins, sorry. Takes a chair shot to the back as if it was 2020 or 2012 Shield. The 2016 Shield, whenever the Shield dismantled. With that, Cody Rhodes took advantage, hit Roman Reigns with 3 crossroads, and then immediately made Samantha Irvin, the ring announcer, cry. If you listen to the announcement, that's all you hear is Samantha Irvin's voice cracking. And I think that's the part that got me, because people think wrestling is just wrestling. Wrestling, Jacob probably thinks wrestling is wrestling.
No, wrestling is storytelling.
Exactly.
That's all wrestling is.
Wrestling tears at your soul, and it's a grown man soap opera.
That's 100% what it is.
And I'm 100% on board for it.
I'm going to ruin the moment for just a second.
Go ahead, asshole.
The crossroads is the dumbest finishing move I've ever seen in my life.
I have to disagree with you a little bit. Rikishi stink face.
No, that's hilarious. That's great. Is it a finishing move that's really going to incapacitate it? Yes, of course it is. It's his ass. You can't tell me that a 300-pound man is going to stick his ass in your face and you're going to want
to... I mean, Justin's right. I'm going to disagree with you strongly with any of the Rock's finishes, except for the sharpshooter.
At least the people's elbow.
The fuck is that?
Like, obviously, everything is with a huge grain of salt because it's fake-ish. The people's elbow is at least like an elbow. It's like a strike. The crossroads looks like I don't even know what the hell it looks like. It is.
Then what's rock bottom?
The rock. At least that's a body slam.
I don't know.
The crossroads looks like it hurts Cody Rhodes more than it does the person that he's doing it to.
You may have a point there.
I'm telling you, I was going to come in and ruin the moment. I watched that and I watched him do three in a row and I was like, I'm pretty sure I could run a mile after that. But hey, to each his own.
So anyways, like I said, I wouldn't keep this long because I do have a 6-year-old.
And the people's elbow at least has some show to it. Like it's got some flair. It's got the ripping the things off and throwing them and it's the Rock. This was just like, hey, let's huddle up and then I'm going to twist around and you're going to act like I hurt you. Sorry. Go ahead.
Anyways, like I said, I will not keep this long because I have a 6-year-old that's trying to sleep. So WrestleMania, Seth said it a while ago. It was in my book. This is my personal opinion. I've always been a huge, huge, huge fan of WrestleMania 17. If you haven't watched WrestleMania 17 and you have Peacock, go watch it. While you're at it, go watch the Becoming Immortal Bray Wyatt documentary. Oh,
that was phenomenal.
That will make you cry.
For now, go watch it until it moves to Netflix.
It'll still be there, I'm sure. Anyways,
the Bray Wyatt one, I think, will be. The old WrestleManias will probably move to Netflix.
Probably. But yeah, so watch WrestleMania 17 and compare it to WrestleMania 40. It's pretty damn close. So my opinion, what I would say is WrestleMania 40 is number 2. But it's very, 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 very close to WrestleMania 17.
Something happened. Jacob's excited. Don't know what it was. Did the Rockies finally win a game?
No, I'm watching Tigres versus Columbus Crew in the CONCACAF Cup quarterfinals. I hate the name. CONCACAF Champions Cup, sorry, quarterfinals. Yeah. And it's in PKs. And so far, Tigres has missed both of theirs. And Columbus has made their only one. They're about to shoot their second. So if you see me do this or look dejected, it's now you know why.
Well, cool. You can do it on your own because that wraps up our WrestleMania talk because we just went through all the matches in a quick hurry.
Earl, in all seriousness, like I understand what wrestling and wrestling means to you, not just like you personally, but I know you and your brother have a strong bond because of it and stuff like that. So I'm happy that you get to enjoy this stuff. I'm happy that we give you an outlet to talk about it just a little bit. I wish that half of the emotion and dedication that you showed to the WrestleMania portion of this podcast could be translated to United Podcasting, but I get it.
So a lot of it was actually on my phone, and I was just going down the list on what I remember from the matches. Matches, I probably got up to food or something.
Fair enough.
All right, with all of that being said, WrestleMania out of the way, New Mexico United out of the way. Jacob, let's get us out of here quickly because it is late, and Earl has to put his old self to bed.
Sweet. So we had – I don't even know if we lost viewers according to our little icon that we can see. So thank you all for sticking around. You can see passionate Earl there with the WrestleMania talk. You can see Seth still being a fantastic robot host. Throughout all of this, Justin, thank you for contributing to the WrestleMania chat, even though you didn't contribute to the United chat.
Jacob, the whole idea is to retain viewers.
I'm just kidding, Justin. I love you.
Get us the fuck out of here, dude.
Yeah, thank you guys. As we've said as far as New Mexico United concerns, they play next Tuesday. We don't know our schedule for next time, but until then, I was trying to think of a wrestling thing to say, and the only thing that came to my mind was, do you smell what the Rock is cooking? And I didn't feel like doing that. So, Earl, do you have any wrestling sayings that you could get us out of here with?
And that's the bottom line.
Oh, I could have done that.
Know your role. There we go. Shut your mouth.
There you go. Good night, y'all. Love you.
You've been listening to Somos Mas, your source for the latest news and notes on New Mexico United, the USL, and the New Mexico Runners. All of our shows are recorded live on Tuesday nights and are streamed on our YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter pages. An audio-only version of the show goes live later in the week on all major podcast platforms. Our show is written and produced by Seth Bedoff, Jacob Terrell, and Earl Nieto, and is edited by Seth. All episodes are recorded and edited using StreamYard and Audacity.